Blog Talk Radio.
Don, I'm going to pull you in a minute. Just let me get a bit of the routine here. Okay, Don, I'm going to cut to the show. I was listening to the Davos 2015 Economic Summit in Switzerland in 2014.
14,
welcome to
okay.
the show, John. So I
yes.
was going to play one 30-second clip. Would you mind?
No, go ahead.
Okay, it's the premier named Li Keqiang, Premier of People's Republic of China. Here we go.
Have emerged one after another, and they pose an immediate threat to humanity. Global economic recovery also lacks speed and momentum. Major economies are performing unevenly. Commodity prices are going through frequent fluctuations, and signs of deflation have made the situation even worse. In fact, many people are quite pessimistic about the future of the world. They believe that the guarantee of peace and tranquility is weak, and the prospect of development is also elusive. A philosopher once said that we cannot solve problems with the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. Indeed, old problems could no longer be solved by clinging to outdated mindset of confrontation, hatred, and isolation. More importantly, dialogue, consultation, and cooperation must be explored to find solutions to new problems. We need to draw lessons from history and pull our collective wisdom
He also said something to the effect of, when faced with a problem, some people build walls and some people build windmills. Now, he started out his topic, this premiere of China, with how the hills of Switzerland were peaceful and the world is in turmoil. And a lot of his speech had nothing to do with economics. It had to do with working together. You there, Don?
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm just listening. I was wondering when you were going
to. Well, I'm just saying, I was trying to inform myself before you jumped on the air, because I don't know a lot about China. While I was listening to a speech, I thought a lot about macroeconomics, like how many cows do they have in China? What type of food do they eat? What are their production rates? Anyways, why don't you start with your topic tonight, and then I'll just chime in when I can.
Oh, that's fine. No problem. Hi, folks. For the most part, I was concerned about the world economy, the U.S. economy taking a dip the last 3 days, 2 out of 3 days. And this is very, very important for the American people to understand, is that we are going through a catharsis. We're going through a new period where money is artificial, and all of the financial systems are based on the U.S. dollar, which will soon change. And that's what this is all about, the start of this. I mentioned to the viewers, listeners before about the Glasnost Directive, and that is where there's a purpose on a new central bank. And so this is the precursor to devaluing the new currency on the world market, which is the yuan. It's not a new currency, but it will be in its valuation after this tumult of fluctuations that it has to go through in order to develop its own new baseline. But, you know, basically, you know, we were taught that the harder we worked, the more money we would make, the better off we would be to take care of our families, the white picket fence, house, two dogs, a dog and two cars, et cetera. And right now that's not it's not happening. The corporates have taken over pretty much most of most countries' finances, and
they've taken over American farms.
Well, no, the American farms have been all American, much of American property has been taken. The most recent in the foreclosure disaster, that property. If you go on, a couple of websites. I don't know them. I'm sorry right now, but I'm sure that you can get them from the HARP program, HARP, H-A-R-P program. But anyway, these corporations and governments have taken these homes and farms from these people for tax and mortgage arrears. And that in many instances, the foreclosures could have been mitigated, but for the lenders who are probably in cahoots with the U.S. government in some form or fashion, but really in the offices of China, have purchased all the property that went into foreclosure. So we are already a United States of China. The thing is that the properties have been difficult to sell with new inflated prices, and so a lot of these properties are vacant. That leaves the opportunity for leasing, renters renting out those properties, which is very, very lucrative. But it also leaves big holes in cities, primarily, of vacant areas. And the corporations, as I mentioned, I was on an East Coast swing 2 weeks ago, and the biggest corporations do nothing at all to help the immediate vicinity of these cities. So the United States cities are dying, and no one is there to help. The income of the residents in the immediate area is so little that they are not able to do that. And the police, of course, fine everyone in those areas. So they, you know, dig into incomes that are on that are welfare level or lower in poverty. And so this is not going to change unless, like your premier said of China, until the hatred, and this applies to every country, every situation, every civilization, when the countries decide to stop hating and whatever else he mentioned in there, where it is detrimental to the people themselves who make up the income, general income base, that they've got to stop doing hateful things to the people so that they can be productive instead of destructive. So that's the economy. The economic idealism is in a whole that's liberal or more progressive or whatever you want to call it. But this is a new day, so you don't really have a word for it. This is kind of a metamorphosized type of ideology. And none of the countries have really, except for Switzerland, have practiced peaceful economics. The economics is guns and butter. Those are the only two ways any country can have its income, its GDP. But we're going to have to devise another way because guns are their problem.
Are you saying, are you comparing guns to force?
Guns to war.
I said force.
What was that word?
F-O-R-C-E. Force.
F-O-R-C-E.
Meaning
yeah,
that,
military,
do you think the economy operates by force or negotiation?
Force. Negotiation has its place when there's an obvious weaker and stronger adversarial relationship. However, most relationships are not equal, are more equal, than not equal. The superpower states themselves, they don't really push themselves, except economically on others. But there are many, many countries who are at war with each other who have somewhat equal standing. And those are the ones who have to exert more force. And that takes more weaponry and more soldiers, things like that, more money out of their GDPs. And so those are the countries where force, the gun, is still king. And the United States makes all the military weaponry for those countries. We are getting killed by our own guns, our own tanks, our own aircraft.
Are you talking about friendly fire or just being in the line of fire?
None of the above. The United States government sells countries like Syria and Saudi Arabia and some of the African countries their weaponry, not to mention most of the other countries in the Eastern European bloc and Asian blocs, Korea, et cetera. We sell them all of our weapons, the ones that we don't keep in storage for 30 years, but they're obsolete.
Russia is the main proponent for supplying arms to Syria because they've been aligned with Bashar al-Assad for over 20 years. But, however, one thing people don't know about Syria is that, which I've mentioned on other shows, is that Bashar al-Assad is from a minority religion called the Alawites, and up until recently he protected the Christians, the Jews, and other people. things didn't get really crazy until the Civil War had been going on for 4 to 5 years, and so many people were displaced to Turkey and other countries that there's really no way for anyone to be properly protected anymore, no matter if you're on his side or the rebel side, which America does finance the rebels.
And I would.
But I don't want to get in. Yeah.
My point exactly.
Well, the most famous subsidy that we've ever given militarily is to Osama bin Laden when he was just a fighter in the Afghan hills back when Russia was occupying the country.
You're forgetting probably a bigger one than that, and that was Iran with the Shah. And we were giving him cheap tanks and anti-ballistic missiles. He was
giving them.
And so, and those weapons are still, or can be still in use today. They become obsolete, but they don't break down with proper maintenance over a long period of time.
Well, I was going to tell you that at the time that we were supporting the Shah of Iran in Iran, about 60 to 70% of the Iranians were Western educated. Our alliance with them was a lot stronger. Iran was a lot more westernized. And that was a couple of years before the Khomeini and the Islamic fundamentalism took over. Now, for our listeners, I'm not going to be able to pick up any guest calls for about 5 minutes. I was frozen out in the basement of my job. I have to go outside to warm up. So
it's middle of summer. What are you talking about?
No, they blast the AC at night, man. I feel like it's a polar vortex.
It is. They're in Duluth, Minnesota. Come on, what do you think you're living in? You're not living in the Bahamas.
Well, it was 85 today. It was about 85 today. No, compared to California, Nevada, you know, it doesn't cool off at night in the warm season. It stays warm.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let's get back on task. So I guess my main bone of contention is the biggest fear that America is going to lose ground, because now China is now a first world country pretty much. I'm sure not all their citizens live in a first world lifestyle.
Very few. Very few.
But the Russians aren't really that far behind anymore either. They went through a slump period after they collapsed in 89, but they're gaining ground too. And they just hosted the Olympics a while ago. So, I mean, do we have to be the world's biggest player all the time, or can't we cooperate? Like somebody made a comment on YouTube that in Davos, Switzerland, the EU is a dying economy. No, it's not necessarily because Germany is a stronghold, but they have to pick up the slack of Greece and other dysfunctional countries that have too high of a retirement rate and other burdens. So, you know, I mean, why does everybody always have to compare? That's my question.
That's what life is about, comparison. Everyone compares themselves, and it's just everyone compares a part of their body to the other part of the body, but everyone compares themselves to everyone else. And that's the source of life. That's the source of motivation, and that's the source of the determination of strength, the degrees
okay,
of strength.
Okay, so let's just say we're not the most economically stable or powerful country in the world. Maybe it would work to our advantage. Maybe have somebody else play the game for a while.
No, that because once you start losing, it's momentum. Not only it's like your education system, momentum takes a hold. And then you not only second, then you turn to fourth, and then you're 14th, and then you're 32nd. And the momentum has people coming through. That's one of the things that's happened with the United States economy, is that we've stopped or slowed down research in almost every phase of the game except for pharmaceuticals. And everything, and those are bad for you. Nobody should be on any drugs ever, doctor-prescribed drugs ever. But anyway, so what happens is that those countries pass you by, and without research, you know, we've lost NASA. We've lost a lot of our governmental agencies. We've lost infrastructure. If we could just start building these bridges and these roads again with governmental dollars instead of having some of these programs that are pork barrel and you know, the farmers, the big farmers, they haven't been paying their dues. The mining hasn't been paying its taxes at all here in Nevada, especially. You know, these guys have gotten away with murder, big economic murder that the United States is reeling in it, and everyone is sending all their money overseas into accounts. But we have trillions of dollars that are not counted for in the United States that are dollars, that are United States dollars, and they're just sitting. So these people, our American leaders have disgraced us, and, you know, the rest of the world is laughing at us, and we continue to propagate the same structures. We're doing the same things.
I heard America only earns one seventh of all our national lands are owned by foreigners. I read the other day.
That's what I was talking about, the Chinese, and that's a, you know, that's a relatively newer, a newer concept, if you will, that the United States is not owned by the people in the United States. They don't.
Well, I remember,
you know,
back when I lived in LA in the late '80s, that somebody told me that Japan owned 10% of the California coast.
Right. And they did. And now Korea owns another 10%. And the Chinese are probably, after this all said and done and all the foreclosures are settled, and the Chinese have purchased all that property, because they've already, they and the Libyans and people from the Middle East, Qatar, and Saudis, they've brought up much of New York. And so when we talk about the biggest cities, you know, Dallas, big Korean Chinese town. You know, we've got cities all over that are, well, 1% is 1%. So there you go.
I'm just wondering why certain people get so rich. I was walking through a neighborhood tonight, and there was an Audi in the driveway, and I was in the mansion neighborhood, and it was just, I'm doing something wrong in life with my 2002 Buick.
Yes, you are. And what it is that you haven't sold out to business. That's what it takes. It takes all in for whatever the business may entail. It could be a mine that lets off 3 million gallons of toxic wood that had it in the first place. That mine in the Colorado, they had told them that they were going to clean that up 25 years ago. This was just a mistake ready to happen.
Are you talking about the coal problem in Colorado with dirty fossil fuels?
No. The EPA hit its own water wastewater reservoir line, and it discharged what it was originally 1 million, and now it's up to 3 million gallons of wastewater full of arsenic and lead and cadmium and everything else under the sun. And it's traversed in the Animas River. It's traversed three states, Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico. New Mexico and Utah have declared state, and Colorado have declared states of emergency already. You haven't heard about that. That happened Sunday. Or I don't know what Sunday, I believe. And
that part of the country.
This is a national disaster over here, because it will ultimately, it's been leaching for I guess 40 years or something like that, but nothing, not 3 million gallons into the river that takes that eventually will flow into Lake Powell, and that's a major waterway for all the way down through Arizona, through New Mexico and Arizona to New Mexico.
I did take a class in California history at LA Valley College, and they there was a lake. It starts with an O. It was in the middle of the state. LA drained that lake. And then they talked about the Colorado Waterway and purchasing water from other states, and it was very informative. Plus the big dam that dried up near Sacramento recently.
Right, exactly. Well, the Colorado River goes down, and the Inland Empire, farmers in the Inland Empire of California.
Right, I know where that is.
And all that. Yeah, they need the Colorado River water for irrigation, and they've been in a war with Nevada and Arizona and the Colorado River water rights for decades. So it ultimately we're going to have a big problem because the Colorado River is the principal tributary here. And that is, Lake Mead is drying up, and so
I heard Lake Mead was in really bad shape. My cousin went down there about 4 months ago, and she said it was a nightmare. And then the Salton Sea is that toxic. The Salton Sea was formed by a drainage is at toxic levels, and all the fish have been dying the last 15 years, and all the other wildlife in there.
Yeah, the toxicity level of the
the Salton Sea.
It's just salt. It's gotten more salt and acid, which is natural, but it's gotten to the point where no fish can survive.
We watched it's on YouTube, by the way, but I watched it in California history class. It's called Plagues and Pleasures on the Salton Sea. It talked about how the lake was formed. It's kind of like a big sea / lake, but how it was formed, the salination, how people who eat out of the sea are exposed to certain toxins. They can't eat the fish. It's a long documentary on public television. You can see it. It's 101 minutes, but it's excellent. And it used to be a haven, a happy place, and now it's a toxic waste dump.
Well, it was a sacred Indian lake. It became that when it was formed. The natives who were living there, and the Hispanics and everybody got together, and they just decided that was a special lake. It's only, I believe, one of three inland salt lakes in North America or Northern Hemisphere or something like that. So it's a very unique landmark.
Yeah, I've been there with Craig. My ex-husband, one time we went through there, and then we went to Calexico and Mexicali in San Diego. We diverted over to San Diego. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's looking.
It's nice. Exactly. But, you know, for the most part, this is the Colorado River Lake Mead is below the intake level now, which means that Las Vegas is recycling its water, and I hear that it might be up to 7 times. So your drink when you come to Las Vegas, you'll be drinking Las Vegas water that has been recycled, and that's all water. That's probably at least 7 times. Then that's just from a source that may or may not know what they were expressing. But
in the northern part of California, up by Auburn or somewhere like that, near Sacramento, that some cities have run out of water completely, and they're buying 5-gallon jugs.
Yes.
And that's how they have to take showers and stuff.
Right, and these, but these are outside of Sacramento County, King County, Sacramento County. They're more towards, I think, more towards Yosemite, going towards Yosemite, and
mm-hmm.
so that's more Modesto and up, going down towards the San Joaquin Valley. But but their water level.
I think you're right. It wasn't so close to Sacramento. You're right.
Yeah, but it's over there, if I remember. And you got to understand that the farmers, California is right now dying in terms of farm activity. There is very, very little normal production, and soon your fruits and vegetables will be going up, as well as beef, because the cattle herds have to be culled for the just the strongest. Because there's not enough water for them to grow feed or water their, you know, give them water. So these farmers have actually killed cows over the amount that they normally do.
Can we change the topic before I get too depressed?
Well, no. I'm talking about the economy, and you should get depressed because right now with the Glazev Directive, GLAZIEV, we are looking for a major downturn. We've just lost 1,000 points in the Dow in the last 2 weeks, and we're not done yet. So our investors, the people who we depend on to eat, the people who depend on to stock our shelves at the grocery stores, everyone with the oil producers, the OPEC oil producers had another opportunity to cut their production late last week, I believe, and they decided not to. They decided to keep their production at the same level. That means that our oil companies here are going to be eating it when it comes down to price. They can't make a barrel of oil. They can't make a profit under $63, something in that neighborhood. And they haven't been at $63.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in defense of bringing that money back, we're talking about the fact that they've been artificially high at 100 for years. So they've still got their profit. So what do the oil companies do? They shut down wells, even though they've made these huge trillion-dollar profits over a 12-year period. They had artificially high prices. What do? They cut jobs. They, try to cut benefits. Then instead of just continuing to either pressure by continuing their production, or by doing other things, because these mostly are mavericks. These are the independent wildcatters who had to mostly cut down their rigs instead of the big oil magnets. But for the most part, that's still where you don't cut production. And then again, we're fracking. Fracking is bringing in a tremendous amount of oil. And I have a Prius, and that's another reason that nobody hears about, is that oil prices are down because demand is down, because you can get now 40 and I get 50 miles a gallon. So nobody that talks about the glut in production combined with the energy efficiency of our transportation system anymore. And that's the reason that people want to start taxing electric cars, mainly because they can't get the gas tax that they got out of them. Every state developed the gas tax, enacted the gas tax back then, and tollway taxes. I mean, and it's that East Coast trip, that was one of the other things that amazed me. Here in America, every single city on the East Coast mandates that people pay to get into the city.
Are you talking about tolls?
I'm talking about tolls.
T-O-L-S. Yeah, I know. I've been on the New Jersey Turnpike. I've been on the Pennsylvania Turnpike many times when I went from Norfolk to... What?
How does that sound? That every thoroughfare to get into a city, i.e. Boston, Baltimore, D.C., Philadelphia, how does that sound? Newark, New Jersey. My God, why would I pay to go to Newark, New Jersey? That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
You know what, Tom? At least they don't have to worry about highway. At least they don't have to worry about building roads and construction. They already have the funds.
Those funds are in the governor. That fund is in Chris Christie's new boat. I mean, gosh, those funds do not necessarily go 100% into infrastructure repair, even though the toll roads were. These people are making money without on the taxpayer's back, and then they send it to offshore Cayman Island accounts. But
when I lived in Norfolk, Virginia, I had to pay a toll every time I went in the underground tunnel from Norfolk to Portsmouth, Virginia, under the Elizabeth River.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does that sound?
I had to pay a toll, like a buck.
How does that sound that you have to pay to get to New York City, to drive to New York City? You have to pay to drive into New York City. That's ridiculous.
I don't know, but one time I was the Lincoln Tunnel. I was on a city bus, and the Lincoln Tunnel like shut down. Like there was some type of collapse, and we had to take a taxi to get back to the airport. And the taxi guy drove on the sidewalks to get around traffic because we were going to be late for our plane. Because I took the plane out of New Jersey, out in, it's not Norwalk, what's the name of that city? Newark. I was flying from Newark, yeah, to Norfolk, and the Lincoln Tunnel collapsed, and I don't remember how he got over to Jersey, but he did.
No, you've never seen taxi drivers like New York City. I'm sure that Turkey and that Istanbul and or Tokyo has some crazy drivers in their taxi system, but these New York taxi drivers were off the chain. They were off the charts, and I loved it because I was able to drive. I had a couple of rental cars there. One of them was a Volkswagen, a brand new Volkswagen, and it was just so much fun.
New York is exciting.
New York is nuts. It's not exciting. It's stupid as all get out because everybody is vain and lonely. All these folks live by themselves or with roommates. Very, you know, unless you're going into Brooklyn or the Bronx or parts of that. But if you get out to Queens, you've got some family areas, but that's about it. The rest of New York is
there's Jews in Brooklyn, the Bronx, and Long Island.
There are what?
Jews who believe in big families.
Oh, no. I didn't say anything about any culture. I'm talking about the people in general. I mean, even Jews stay by themselves and get lonely. And that's what this is about.
It is a lonely city. People go there thinking that they're going to live a big life and have a lot of excitement, and some do and some don't.
It's a lot of hard work, and it's expensive. So, you know, the people who live in New York, unless you're there with your business, they really should get out and move towards a more peaceful life. And that's my message when I was at the NAACP convention in Philadelphia. That's one of the reasons I went. That's why I've mentioned that to everyone, that I don't understand why black people and Hispanics live in the cities anymore. They know what
some people live there because it's a it's an intergenerational thing. They have an attachment to the land.
That's the only reason they do it. The land's not theirs. They're renting. The land is some...
I know.
So there's no reason for them to stay in an oppressive, suffocating city when there are these rural areas or smaller cities throughout the United States that could, that would welcome them. They would have jobs for them, and they would be able to, the people themselves would be able to live safer, more comfortable lives. They have, you know, children or someone who they really want to make a future with. I moved to Reno, Nevada, because I could not raise my children in Los Angeles. I was doing everything in Los Angeles. I was making money. I was king of the shoot. Working for the LA Times, I was king of the world for a while. But I could not see staying in Los Angeles while my children grew up in an environment that was detestful in all actuality. It is Los Angeles, San Francisco. They are just not places where children should grow up. Oakland, they're not places where children should grow with the experiences that are there. So, you know, there are many, many other places in the country that would accept Dominicans or you know, blacks or whatever, Koreans. They already know. The Koreans and Eastern Indians, they're everywhere because they know that they're welcome. They were welcome. They got their jobs. They opened their businesses wherever they were, and now they are very successful. And those people who are still living in the squalor of the cities, Section 8, as a preferred method of residence, they have no concept of why they're here, here in America. And I'm not talking about immigrants. I'm talking about people.
John, I have to kind of slow you down a second because we only have 3 minutes left.
Okay.
So you're going to have to do your conclusion now.
All right. Well, if all said and done, what people need to do is stop and think. We're having a hard time relaxing and being able to rejuvenate our minds because of all the activity that's going, the frenetic activity that's going around all around us. That peace is produced from peace. War is the product of war, and there's nothing in between. So
you kind of said something similar to what the Chinese leader said in the beginning. He was talking about in his speech at the Davos conference for World Economic Forum that life could be peaceful if people, he was alluding to this. Life could be peaceful if people chose it to be. They don't have to be engaged in all the chaos and economic mess and competition, but somehow man does not choose a life of tranquility. They choose the chaos.
Well, but I'm going to run for the premier of China in the next election. Good luck if I'm alive.
I think you won't blend in, that's for sure.
But they might. I'll ask Sun Yin Il from North Korea to come over and vouch for me. But
I just don't like all the competition in the world. Why can't we all be like Sweden? You know, like just be happy and content.
And then that is racism. Those people who have at this time in history, it doesn't matter what time in history, but everybody, racism and sexism.
Well, I am being biased because I'm Swedish, but they do structure a life where they're taxed heavily, but none of the poor really suffers, and they have a community based. I know. I just said that. But they do have community-based life.
They're at 70. Yeah, that's communism right there.
Well, so what? They all eat. They all have health.